Hi, listeners, and welcome to my third episode of Inside Entertainment Industry Careers, a show that gives you personal insights into a variety of career roles in the creative industries. I'm your host, Emily Maguire, talent manager at Reflections Talent Agency and a career and business coach for the creative and entertainment industries at Reflections Career Coaching. My third guest is Stefano De Frey, who shares his career insights into the world of acting, directing, and as a film producer. Italian-born Stefano is an AFI award-winning film director and screenwriter who began his career as an actor in Canada before moving to New York and attending the Neighborhood Playhouse School of Theatre. Since graduating, Stefano has appeared in numerous film and TV shows, including the American hit shows like Law and Order Criminal Intent and Blue Bloods. As a director, his work has premiered around the world, including at the Cannes Film Festival, and he is the co-founder and president of the award-winning global production company Rosso Films International, which is best known for making arthouse films that inspire a human connection and have featured on channels such as NBC Universal and Apple TV. So relax and enjoy this interview with Stefano as he gives insights into his career journey as a film producer, how his philosophy degree impacts the work he now does, and how working as an actor helped him to create stronger connections whilst working on set as a director and helps him to get the most from his cast and crew. Hi Stefano, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your career journey in the world of not only acting but producing and directing.
It is my joy to be with you. It is a long journey, as you know, and I'm happy to share as much information as I can.
And you're over in America at the moment, aren't you?
I am. I am in the heart of New York City on the Upper West Side. I can see Central Park from my window right now.
That's so cool.
It is pretty cool, yeah.
Makes me think of Friends and all those typical kind of sitcom movies.
Yeah. I feel it. When I was a struggling actor, I lived in Harlem. And then as I started to earn a living a little bit more working professional jobs, I was moving closer and closer to the park. So I always oriented Central Park towards my success, whether I was distant or closer to it.
The closer and closer you got. I like that.
Yeah.
Did you always know that you wanted to work in the entertainment industry from a young age?
I think that all of us who are creative, if we're painters or writers, or like to sketch or have a big imagination, we don't know per se that we want to make a living in the industry. And the reason is that you don't know whether you want to turn your hobby and what you love into your job, into your life. I think that gap is the most crucial gap to asking anyone who's talented then to rely on that talent to earn a living. I was always a creative kid. I always was obviously involved in arts programs and creative writing programs. And so you start to see early on that you're placed into special classes, let's say early on as a child and then in high school. And I think that there was a sense of turning it into a career really when I was studying philosophy. I was doing a very traditional academic degree and I loved studying philosophy, but I didn't think that I was going to end up teaching philosophy or becoming an academic. And I realized at that point that I was probably going to go to a vocational school, whether it was acting, to a theater school or to film school. And it was around that time after I graduated with a philosophy degree, that's when I knew that I was going to work.
And that sort of feeds into your career as you've been going as well, the philosophy.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you create films, when you make movies, the last film that I made was a feature film called Stolen Dough. And it's a crime docudrama. And when you're examining parts of a film and you have to have the scope of your entire humanity when it comes to sound design, interpretation of actors, because you're working with real actors and real scenes. I also wrote the feature film. You're working with color, lights, lenses, so the type of glass that you're using. I always found my philosophy background extremely helpful because it asked the question of, you know, why are we telling this story? What is the reason that the audience is, what are they going to learn from this? What's the point of seeing this scene and then connecting it to the next scene? I think that keeping that background of philosophy really helped me with the nuts and bolts of making a film and understanding it and how it would sort of reach audiences.
It's kind of a perfect example in terms of career as well, that something unrelated can easily become part of your journey as you go forward and influence the things that you do.
That's brilliantly said, Emily. Brilliantly said, because individuals at the time that they're studying something, they don't know what their life is going to become if they don't follow the traditional path of whatever that, you know, if you're in chemistry, does it mean that I have to ultimately become a chemist? If I become someone who is studying history, does it mean that I have to become a historian and write research papers on history or ultimately teach? And the answer is no. The answer is that there will be many opportunities in your life and so many different technical and career jobs that will require specifications of these fields that you learned, whether you got a bachelor's degree or a master's, to move forward into doing other practical things. And I want to say about filmmaking, ultimately, what I love about it, it's a practical job. You have to have a team around you. You have to set your schedule for the day. There's a lot of locations, hard practical things in terms of using cameras and the amount of time on the card and how you're going to practically get away with shooting something. And the practicality of that really anchors you in a sense of modesty and I think a sense of groundingness, so that when you become creative in a practical environment, you're really at the precipice of touching art.
Do you grow up in Italy, is that correct? And then you moved over to Canada?
You know, when I was dating, I would always tell girls that I was very Italian. And I love to say that. I love to say that. Parlo italiano, cresciuto di parlare italiano a casa. And I speak it with my family, and I love to go back to Italy. I was just in Rome. Food is a big part of growing up Italian with my culture and being Italian. I grew up, which I'm very proud of, in the French part of Canada, which I would consider it its own culture, a distinct culture from Canada, because it inherited the sort of the French kind of ideas of wanting to be different and being factually different from the rest of Canada. You growing up in Montreal and going to school in Montreal, we spoke French and I went to school in French. And then I moved to New York. And I think that if I can just tell your listeners this, that when you're becoming an artist, and this is certainly the case with younger people in a younger generation, be careful that identity doesn't become an addiction. In other words, we're living in an environment now, specifically in the generation right below us, the Gen Zs, and we are, through identity politics, separated from each other. You see this on a BFI, British Film Institute grant. You see it in the grants for the humanities in the United States. And it's something I've noticed as an artist over the last 20 years. That's important to celebrate, but it's also important that when you're making movies, and ultimately when you're creating characters, that you're tapping into something hopefully beyond identity, something that is universal and that is human. And you don't want to get caught at sort of the last parts of overly identifying, overly labeling oneself, and overly labeling other people, so that you can't bridge that connection. It's very good to be a proud Italian. It's very good to be a proud Quebecer. But at the end of the day, they're just labels. And your culture is important, but it's your humanity and what exists and what you create as an artist has to transcend that culture. There needs to be, I think, a diversity of thought rather than just a label of diversity in our humanities. And certainly, the film industry doesn't have it the worst. There's a lot of diversity of thought in film, and I actually applaud that to all the different filmmakers from different backgrounds and that are not resting on whatever country that they're from. And David Fincher's films, you know, are dark. They certainly are American, but there's something beyond being American. I think that this is an important thing to keep aiming for. Universal stories. I feel strongly about that when I look at my material, my characters, my casting, the type of people that I like to work with, and what I tell students when who are thinking of becoming filmmakers.
It sounds very much just to push past the boundaries each time.
Yeah, thank you. You want to get to the goods, you know? You want to get to the goods. There's a lot of things that hold you back. Money holds you back. Labels hold you back. There's a bunch of reasons not to make a movie. What you're trying to look for are reasons to make it, or to step aside from all the reasons. And there's so much reasons not to do something that it's really important to hold on to the role models and the people who are saying, okay, let's get on with it. This is a green light. Let's make this movie. Let's make this let's write this script and let's move forward on production.
I suppose how that would feed back to our listeners is telling them that there is no limitations, regardless of which background they come from.
Yes, I think that is very important. And your background helps you in terms of being gritty, in terms of what you bring to a production. You know, I've had a production company now for 10 years, and I co-founded this with another co-founder, Laura Pellegrini, who's a co-founder of Rosso Films. And when we started 10 years ago, we had no connections to the film industry. We had no connections to people. Our parents weren't in the film industry. And I think that being an outsider is an advantage. If you think of it as an advantage, you'll orient yourself to use the qualities that you've had to develop as being an outsider, to being resilient and being scrappy, and try to put that into your business and to put that into your work ethics. Your work habits, your work ethics are the most important, the more important than designing the greatest shot or the greatest script. Without your work ethic, you don't have anything. And that's so important to tell people. It's even more important than talent. Talent comes second. Your work ethic comes number one.
That kind of reflects one of the other people that I've been speaking with as well, in terms of that when they choose people to work with, you might have this amazing portfolio, but it's more about you as an individual and how you work with each other and as a team.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. I even meet the grips who some people in the film industry would consider them, individuals at a medium level who are just moving lights around and working with the gaffer. I like to meet my grips, because every individual who's on set has a personality. And that personality, if it is extremely negative, can really bring down the morale of a day that goes on 12 or 13 hours or 14 hours. I want them, first of all, to feel heard, that the director's taking time to spend with them, that I care. I know, not just I know their name, I know a little bit about them. I know why they're working with me, hopefully. And then I get a sense of who they are as people.
So those core work skills, it's that adaptability, flexibility, good communication, teamwork in it. It's the core skills that many people can learn.
I think looking at it like a trade that you would, I don't know a better way to look at it, but sort of like an army. I think that it's hard not to look at it in terms of the procedural breakdowns of an army. You have captain, you have a lieutenant. There is a hierarchy of structure in making a film. And it's really important to being able to know what every department is doing, and to be able to giving them enough flexibility to do their job, but overseeing enough so that you know when something is going wrong. And I think that's critical in the job of a director. I don't want to make the full conversation about nuts and bolts and technical things, but it is, you know, it's like, okay, Stefano, when are we going to talk about, like, you know, the really cool shots and the incredible, you know, shooting at golden hour. And like, that's only possible when you know what you're doing with the team you're doing it with. And so then you have the ability to achieve success.
Your training started as an actor, didn't it? What's been your most favorite and challenging roles so far in your career when it comes to the acting side?
You know, I was lucky. I tell my wife that I do one role on television maybe a year. Now that I've started directing more, my favorite role as an actor there's two roles. One was a role of a director who heavily influenced me. His name was Kelly Beam and became a friend of mine. Film called Animal, where I played a young man. It was a crime film, and I played a young man who you could see his a lot of the crimes that he was doing. There was a whole psychological profile of neglect and abuse from his father, and it's a very slick film. And I met one of my best friends on that movie, who's about 10 years older than me, Russ Camarda, who is the other lead in the movie Animal. So myself and Russ are in the movie Animal. And then Kelly, this director, he was actually about the same age as me when he directed the film. When I was getting ready to do Stolen Dough and edit it, he was dying. And he passed away last year. And I think about him as a director a lot. Not only is it one of my favorite roles playing Ben in the movie Animal, but I also love the experience of working with Kelly. And now that he's gone, it really put perspective into me of, you know, you work with some creative people that push you to another level to inspire you. I don't think I would have started directing had it not been for Kelly. I learned a lot about him. He was a better director than I was, obviously, at the time. And I look up to him all the time. And he was actually a little bit younger than me. And I think there are certain people that are put into your life that give you, reorient yourself into becoming a better artist. And that was one of my favorite roles. And then lastly, I worked with an Oscar-winning director, Ang Lee, who directed Life of Pi, also got an Oscar, I believe, for Brokeback Mountain. I was in the film that Ang Lee had done right after he wrapped Brokeback Mountain called Taking Woodstock. It was the first time that I went to the Cannes Film Festival. It was in competition for Best Film at Cannes, the movie Taking Woodstock. And it was my first speaking role. It was just an amazing time to get a speaking role and be at the Cannes Film Festival. And I was, you know, in my early 20s, and it had a huge impact on my life. And that was outstanding to me. That was just one of the most mind-blowing experiences that could have ever happened. And those are my two favorite acting roles.
Two very inspirational projects for you in terms of your career and where you've gone after that.
Correct. That's exactly right. So true.
Has there been any projects that you've worked on that have been challenging, and how did you kind of overcome those challenges?
Well, I think the feature film that I just finished, my first feature, Stolen Dough, you can see Stolen Dough on Apple TV, Amazon Prime. It's featured on the Roku channel for top films, top crime documentaries in the month of March. And you can get more information on stolendough.com. This movie was a big challenge. Even though I had gotten funding from the Russo brothers, which are famous from the Marvel comic universe for Avengers Endgame and doing Captain America Winter Soldier, the challenges that I had for them was I had to enter in a rough cut at a very, very quick deadline. And that means that I was filming the movie at the very end of April, and I had to deliver a cut for them at the very end of August. And for your listeners who are filmmakers who know, that is like a crazy deadline. It's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure because you're not certain whether this film is going to work. You don't know whether you have all the material. You don't know whether how the edit's going to go. There's so much you don't know. And making that deadline for August 31st for the movie Stolen Dough and handing that movie in to the Russo brothers was so stressful for me. That was probably one of the most stressful things. Now, in hindsight, as my wife would say, as Sierra would say, and as my friends would say, my cinematographer AJ would say, and my producer Laura would say, that worked out to be a blessing because it pushed me, and it pushes everybody to know, listen, well, there's no time to joke around. You guys got to get this done, and it's got to be handed in. Otherwise, you'll lose the financing for it.
Yeah,
I think that's the first challenge. Second challenge about Stolen Dough that was challenging, which is a story, just to tell your listeners, a story about an inventor who had a patent, an actual real-life patent for stuffed crust pizza. He had it patented and then went into business and conversations to use that patent with the corporation Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut had reviewed the patents 2 times and said that they were interested in going into business. After about a year and a half of negotiations, they finally wrote to him and said, you know what, on second thought, we're actually going to go at this alone. But what they do is copy the exact same patent that he had used. So begins a $1 billion lawsuit. This was the biggest lawsuit in food history, in patent history for food at the time. And Stolen Dough is a crime docudrama that essentially follows, basically follows Anthony Mangiello, who is the real life inventor of stuffed crust pizza and the patent holder, and follows his journey. I think the hardest part of that, Emily, was how do you make patent law exciting, dramatic, dark, gritty, and understandable to an audience? I really focused in my editing, when I spent the time editing the film, to really making it comprehensible, understandable, clear, bite size, you know, so that you're not in the weeds about this detail or that detail, that you really understand ultimately what the patent's about, what they're arguing about, and you want to get the audience to really understand what's going on. And I think we succeeded, you know, I think we succeeded in doing that in the movie.
Starting out as an actor, moving into the directing and producing, that was just a natural progression for you in terms of that inspiration and the direction that you went.
That's exactly right. I would say there's two things about that. The first is that I did, you know, I want to be completely honest with your listeners. I did go to film school and spend time in film school. So I want to say with full respect that the job of directing, there is a kind of movement, a no film school kind of movement that is going around. It's been going around for the last 5 or 6 years that you don't need to go to film school, that you can just pick up a camera and shoot. You can certainly pick up a camera and you can certainly shoot. Whether it's going to be good, whether you have any comprehension of assembling footage and understanding why you're shooting, what you're shooting, is a completely different story. I found going to film school extremely helpful, and I will always, always love the time. So after I was working professionally as an actor, I attended a school called the School of Visual Arts in New York City on the Lower East Side. I went to SVA, School of Visual Arts, on the Lower East Side on East 23rd in New York City. And that helped to not only build relationships with people I still work with to this day, cinematographers and camera operators and creative collaborators, but also gave me a sense of grammar. And having cinema grammar is really important. And on top of that, what you mentioned, Emily, I was on set as an actor with a lot of directors. And when you're an actor being directed by many directors, you can tell as an actor ones that you know don't have their stuff together. They're incoherent. They're overwhelmed. They're not prepared. And so you work for 7, 8, 9 years as a professional actor and you think, what qualities do I want to emulate? What are the role models that I have of directors that I'd like to be like in my experience that I have been with? And what are the type of qualities that I want to avoid ultimately? And that's what helped me. Those two combinations of being an actor, seeing directors working, ones that I liked and ones that I didn't like, and ones who were extremely competent, others that were just completely, you know, didn't know what they were doing, and making sure I was never going to be like that. And and the combination of going to film school was everything.
So it sounds like film school and the experiences that you had on set with other directors, all those different experiences have fed into how you now interact with the actors that you're directing. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. Yeah. So, and it's a great point to bring up, because when you have actors that you need, sometimes 5, 6, 7 actors in a scene, they're all going to ask you different questions in terms of their backstory. And also, why am I saying this? Why is this happening? What happened before for this to occur now? As an actor, you think about these things all the time because you're preparing for your role sometimes weeks and months in advance. I've met brilliant directors that are my age, older than me, you know, who are incredible in terms of composition, but they tell me, Stefano, I'm terrified to talk to actors. And I say, why? They say, well, it's something I've never done. So mm-hmm. I don't know how to explain to them, you know, certain things of why I want them to move in this direction, or I want them to behave this way. I think that as a director, behavior is everything. It's everything on mm-hmm. camera. It's everything in terms of personal relationships. If you can be very clear with your actors about behavior, and then cast actors and have actors so that they're clear with their behavior, and you guys are creating an alchemy of a role together. That's really the most important thing I would say when it comes to talking to actors. You know, actors want to act. They want to give you a great performance. And so making them feel safe, making them feel that you understand their process, they'll give you 20 takes of different interpretations of the material if they trust you. And I think that's really the most important thing, to create that relationship where you're talking to them and they feel that, okay, they've got someone who is driving. You need a pilot for the plane. You know, this guy, Stefano, really understands this. You know, he understands what I'm doing. And so that respect carries over into a successful production, I would say.
When you look back over your career, is there any piece of advice that you received that stuck with you?
Let me think about this, because there are so many good pieces of advice. There's so many pieces of advice. Like, as I close my eyes, there are so many pieces of advice I've got. Something that isn't cliche. I'll give you two pieces of advice. The first most important piece of advice is, it's extremely important to make sure that you can make clear art. In other words, make sure that your art has clarity, that you hold the value of clarity and coherence. If you have to over-contextualize it, over-explain it to someone, it doesn't work. That's a feeling. It's a feeling, and it should be understood. If you're aiming for universal ideals, those universal ideals should be felt with clarity. So make sure that your films have that clarity as an ultimate value, and that you're striving for that, right? And that includes also the pacing of your films, that they're paced clearly. They're not laboring. If someone gives you their eyes for an hour and a half or 2 hours or 1 hour, they're giving you their eyes, they're giving you their ears. Don't belabor that time. Make sure that you are treating their attention span with respect. So clarity is one of the most important things. Make sure that your pacing has that speed in it as well. And that pace that takes into account the viewer's attention span. That is essential. Don't fight against that. Work with it. Work with it. That's a very specific piece of advice. Second piece of advice I would give, and it's very, very important, is the following. When you're creating art, and this is hard to do, make sure that your art is distinguishable. Try to have your art distinguishable from other artists. It's going to be one of the few things that allow you to stand out. If you're creating work that is indistinguishable from Jane to Tom to Bill to Bob to whomever, it's very hard to reach a level of artistry that is in the realm of unique. And if you'll notice, all artists that you look up to have a signature style. Now, you don't have to start with a signature style. I would not start with that. I would first start with trying to get good at what you're doing. But think about that question, right? Think about it. Hold it to yourself and say, okay, I'm not yet at the place where I'm doing everything great or as good as I can be, but let me think about what I'm doing that is unique to my style. Make sure that you try to develop that, because that's a good thing. You can tell the difference between a Rothko and a Pollock painting. all these modern artists. And the third thing I would say, this is the last third thing, is if you're going to be a filmmaker or any type of artist, look at other disciplines. If you're painting, look at dance. If you're writing, look at film. If you're dancing, look at modern art. Try to learn from other art forms. That's what I would say as well.
So really going back to what you were saying at the start as well, that all experience feeds into the future and the journey that you take. When you think back over your career, our listeners, some of them might be just starting out or maybe they're still at school. What piece of wisdom could you share with them?
I would say the most important thing is to know that if you're making art and you're starting off, that it's a vocational life, like being a priest or like being someone who has any type of vocation where it's a calling. And if that's a job that you really feel is your calling, be prepared for the ups and downs and the challenges and the disconnects and the pain from people who work a 9-to-5 job. There will be moments in your life over a long period of time where there will be people who are able to put the work aside because they are done work at 5 o'clock or they start work at 9 o'clock and they have, you know, maybe free weekends and they have all these different things. If you're going to go into a vocational type of job, which is filmmaking and being an artist, be prepared for those challenges so that you're emotionally resilient to continue on your path and not see those things as surprising you. Don't be surprised by that. It's part of that distance, that pain, whatever that is between yourself and regular society, the insecurity of where the next dollar will come from. That's a very important thing to become friends with, because it is a real thing that all artists, and the questions you're asking yourself of where that next dollar is going to come from, all the great artists that you look up to, all the role models that you have all asked themselves the same thing.
That's been a really insightful conversation, Stefano, and I think there'll be a lot there for our listeners who are branching out into the world of directing or producing or even acting, considering those routes. They'll be able to learn some things from what you said, so thank you.
It's been such a pleasure, Emily, talking to you. I've had such a wonderful time. It's flown by. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you for listening to this Inside Entertainment Industry Careers podcast. Make sure to subscribe for an email notification of when the next podcast episode goes live in 2 weeks' time. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with your friends, family, and network and leave us some feedback.